Welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast that brings you the latest news and interviews inside the Debian community. Brought to you by FrostbiteSystems.com, providing desktops and notebooks pre-installed with Debian. Every purchase from Frostbite Systems, a portion of the proceeds will be donated back to Debian and help support this great project. So stop on by FrostbiteSystems.com and get your Frostbox today. Hello and welcome to This Week in Debian. Today we've got a great episode for you. We're speaking with Jeremiah Foster, the former Deb Master of the MAMO project. Jeremiah, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks very much for having me. This is a real thrill.
Oh, not a problem. It's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to doing this interview. So, I guess before we get too deep into the conversation, I like to ask everyone that I interview, how did you first get involved into Linux?
Well, damn good question. Actually, I was kind of a Mac guy for a while, and then when Apple moved from their OS into a Unix-based, the FreeBSD OS, all of a sudden there was this thing called the terminal, and I was like, well, what's that? And so I started hacking around with that and realized that this was a very powerful Unix machine, and from that I went and got some more education. I did some graduate work in Unix, and while studying Unix, they were switching at the time from Unix to Linux, and I got involved in Red Hat fairly early. So I just followed that path directly to Debian, and I've been stuck on Debian ever since.
So how did you discover Debian and find Debian and get involved?
Well, I was living in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was studying at BU.
Okay.
And then I got a job at MIT, and MIT had its own Debian distribution, essentially, called Sippy Debian.
Huh.
It was really cool because it allowed you to use AFS that was specific to the MIT environment, Athena.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, you know, I had this free operating system that could connect to, you know, educational and institutional servers all over the world through AFS, and that was just a mind-blowing experience.
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, essentially, MIT, they run a bunch of operating systems. They have a lot of Sun workstations. Of course, they have a lot of Windows. But I think their official Linux version is their own version of Red Hat. They do some modifications. But this thing called the Student Information Processing Board, SIPI, built their own Debian version that was just like the MIT version. And I started using that, and it was really fantastic.
I guess that kind of, because I was going to ask when you mentioned you went to school at MIT, I was going to ask, you know, since Richard Stallman kind of, he came from there and started the whole GNU movement inside MIT, I was going to ask how is the, you know, the free and open software still at MIT? It seems like it's still going strong from what you say.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, their students, and they want to test everything. So this group called the Student Information Processing Board, they'll try anything. You know, they'll get digital TV running on a Mac, and they'll test all kinds of operating systems and stuff like that. So it's not really that focused on free software. However, a great number of people are very philosophical about it. They have very strong positions.
Mm.
And it's well known in the artificial intelligence lab and stuff like that, that Richard Stallman came from there and that tradition. So, and the Free Software Foundation is based in Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it still has very strong roots at MIT.
That's cool. So, Jeremiah, we were talking before the interview, and I introduced you as the former Deb Master of MAMO. For mm-hmm. people that may live under a rock or haven't been mm-hmm. on Earth for a while, or could you explain to our listeners what MAMO is?
Absolutely. MAMO is an operating system based on Debian, designed to run on essentially a small tablet or, in fact, a telephone. Nokia likes to call their most recent version of MAMO a operating system for a mobile computer, and the most recent version is the N900, and it has, you know, a powerful OMAP3 processor, as well as modems to connect to the cellular network, and in some cases in the past they've even had WiMAX modem. So it's the operating system is, you know, completely based on Debian in the sense that you use apt-get to install software. It uses the deb as the package format. It can virtually install vast amounts of Debian packages without any modification whatsoever. Now, a lot of Debian packages are tend to be run on a desktop system, so they may be a little heavy, and they may not be optimized for a small device. But you can do that optimization fairly easily, which means that, say, you know, potentially up to 95% of Debian packages could work on this MAML platform without much work at all. That's which is kind of exciting because Debian has like 27,000 packages.
Yeah, seriously. So, so that's pretty interesting. Like, so you could, like, say if you're visiting a website or whatever and this, you know, this package had a .deb you could download, you could essentially download the .deb onto your N900 or whatever, and it would, you have a pretty good chance of it actually installing and running?
Exactly.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Installing and running, yep. And, you know, if that didn't work right out of the box, you, of course, would have the source code, and you'd be able to compile it yourself on that particular device, and you should be able to run it anyway. So, you know, there in some cases, there is a little hacking you have to do, but even for users, a lot of things will just work right out of the box.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It is. It's really exciting because it shows that, you know, Debian, being the universal operating system, has a lot of support for the ARM chip architecture. And so it was really logical for Nokia to go with Debian because Debian had already done all the heavy lifting. Other distributions, let's say Fedora, they don't have the same breadth in terms of focusing on various hardware. For example, you know, are they really going to spend a lot of time working on a PowerPC port? Are they really going to spend a lot of time working on the Spark architecture or MK68?
Yeah, actually Fedora dropped the PowerPC support. They did have it up until a release or two ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they dropped it. So now they only do, you know, x86 and x64.
Don't they have an ARM port, though? Or
Might, but I mean, it's not clear that they do have one then if they do. I guess you would have to know they have one. I haven't seen that. They don't have one on, like, if you go to their website to download it. They only have the two architectures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so. But yeah, I mean, Debian, if you look at, like, the supporting architecture, it's like MIPS, x86, ARM, 64-bit, what's that, like, i64? Is it like an Itanium or whatever?
I think that is Itanium, yeah.
Yeah, Itanium 64, all this other stuff. It's like literally 12 architectures or something like that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's amazing and stuff that I don't use. You know, I just use Intel chips. But Nokia saw this kind of support, and they were like, wow, you know, Linux works on that? That's cool. So, and this was kind of a long time ago. You know, MAMO as a device and as an operating system has been around now for quite some time, and it sort of outdid the iPhone, I think.
Mm.
Perhaps Nokia didn't see this as a marketable product for the consumer electronics market space, or didn't design it for that. It, in some ways, it felt more like a research and design or research and development project, proof of concept sort of thing. But, you know, I think some of those, the N800 and those early tablets were really kind of exciting.
Yeah, that's actually kind of funny that you mentioned that. Like, you know, the MAMO project was out before, I believe, that first iPhone. It came out in like an 07 or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah, so I think that's kind of interesting. If someone, you know, higher up maybe in Nokia would have had a little more foresight, with the right direction and the right kind of, you know, push, they could have maybe been ahead of everything instead of trying to, I mean, now it's like, it looks like they're trying to play catch up, you know?
Yeah, it does feel like they're trying to play catch up.
So, but.
And I think the MIGO plan is part of that serious catch up, but in a funny way, they were out ahead of the curve.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was about to say. That's what's funny. Like, they were ahead of the curve, but now it seemed like they fell drastically behind.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're, you know, trying to catch up, and it's kind of funny how things can happen like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know, they're still the largest smartphone and cell phone manufacturer in the world. Nokia has a billion customers, so you know, I'd be reluctant to bet against them.
Yeah. They definitely have a big enough lead to where they don't have to worry just yet. They still have time. So Yeah. Well, I guess I do want to talk about Mego, but before we get too far into Mego, could you explain, because, you know, MAMO is a derivative of Debian, and that's actually how I got a hold of you on the derivatives mailing list. Could you maybe tell listeners, like, you know, explain what a derivative is and maybe sort of what the process was to make MAMO out of Debian?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, essentially, there are three main Linux distributions. Let's say if we go back far enough in time, you see these three major ones. And Debian was founded in 1993. Slackware, I think, was founded, you know, earlier.
I think
Red Hat came out.
Yeah, I think Slackware is literally like a few months before Debian. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Like 4 or 6 months or something like that, if you want to get like very technical, you know.
Well, in the end, Debian ended up being, it's this huge project, and because of the Debian social contract, I think it attracted a lot of people who were really willing to volunteer time and felt that the time they did volunteer was put to good use, somebody wasn't stealing their work. And Debian nowadays has the most derivatives of any distribution.
Mm.
And essentially, you know, my definition of a derivative is, okay, you're taking essentially the packaging system and will use those packages to enable a variety of software out in the ecosystem that's developed for Linux. So if you look at the derivatives, Ubuntu uses their own kernel, but they use apt and, you know, use that just sort of straight off. They don't change that significantly. Yes, they do put, say, graphical user interfaces over on top of it that are different from Debian, but essentially that packaging system is identical.
Mm.
Which allows often Ubuntu packages to just work on Debian and Debian packages to work on Ubuntu. Often there are some changes to the underlying architecture, but so essentially a derivative just allows you to sort of be Debian-like in terms of installing software. MAMO was an offshoot of the ARM architecture distribution that Debian has. It's sort of hard to specify exactly what Debian is because it runs on so many architectures. It's just sort of this big pile of stuff. But yeah, Debian's always had pretty good support for ARM. And I think when Nokia was looking for a Linux operating system, I don't think Debian was necessarily the first choice. I do think that Debian had the best support for the architecture of the phones that Nokia was making. So I think for them it was a pretty logical choice to just go ahead and use that infrastructure, use that packaging system, and take advantage of all the developers in the ecosystem to build the MAMO platform upon. And that's just what they did.
Hmm. So what's the process like? Like, I imagine it differs between each derivative, but like, what does the person have to do to start like making a MAMO off of the Debian ARM architecture? Hmm.
Well, if you're a software developer and you're making a package, essentially you can follow the Debian packaging instructions to package your software. Then what you do is you submit your package to the MAMO builder, and it will build against all your needed dependencies, and then users can use it and download it. Now, sometimes in some cases because of regulation, like not just anybody can access the cellular network, you may not be able to get all open source dependencies on your package, whereas you can in Debian.
Mm.
For example, if in Debian, if you're going to use a modem to access the internet, that's not a problem. All that software source is open. But if you're going to do the same thing to access a cellular network, there are national and international regulations, and so Nokia is going to say, hold on a second, you don't have the kind of agreements between various nations to access this software, so we're going to limit that only to companies and people that do. So there are some limitations in that regard. Then there are some sort of minor limitations. Of course, there's branding. You know, you're going to use the MAMO symbols, and you're going to use the MAMO compiler because it's not necessarily following GCC as closely or as quickly. So there are differences there, but by and large, the process is very similar.
So Jeremiah, what was it like dealing with Debian while you were making, helping make MAMO or starting to make MAMO? What did Debian do to help you out with that process?
Well, actually, it was very interesting because a lot of Debian developers are very interested in the N900. Many Debian developers also were interested in running completely open software on their phones, and it was hard to do with the original OpenMoco, but ironically, Nokia really pushed that whole process much more closer to reality. So a lot of Debian developers were eager to buy the N900. I remember one year at Fallstam, I couldn't believe how many I saw. And active Debian developers would join the MAMO project and show up and become part of the community. So, you know, I would say it was a really enthusiastic response from the Debian community and from Debian developers. There's always a bit of tension, I think, when a company takes Debian software and starts to make profit on it. But I think that many Debian developers felt that Nokia was largely open source enough for them to trust. Mm. And it was such an exciting and novel product that they felt that there was more good than bad. So the relationship was, you know, was very good. I won't say that Nokia sought active support from Debian. I mean, they wouldn't go to, say, the Debian conference and try and cajole Debian developers to make their software work better.
Mm.
But on the other hand, Debian never refused bug reports from MAMO or anything like that. They encouraged Nokia and MAMO to work as closely with Debian as they possibly could.
That's pretty cool. So did Debian have any sort of like mailing list or anything like that for MAMO, or did MAMO have to do stuff like that on their own separate outside of the Debian project?
The thing is that MAMO had its own build system. And because of that, there wasn't really a lot you could ask Debian about. For example, if you make a package and you put it up in Debian's build farm and it breaks, you can go to, you know, Debian mentors or drop in on IRC and say, hey, why did my package break on the Debian builder? And then, of course, they're going to help out. But if you're doing that in a private build system somewhere far away, they're going to be like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I can't see into that, so I'm not going to help you. So there was that division between the two projects in the sense that MAMO had its own build system and people who had questions about it would really have to stay within MAMO. If you had more general questions, say, about how dpackage or apt-get works, you could go right to Debian, but still, most people stayed within the MAMO sphere.
Hmm. What was Nokia's like participation like? Since there's kind of like a triangle effect going on, like, did Nokia ever deal with Debian, or would Nokia basically talk with MAMO and say, you know, hey, look, you know, we need you to do XYZ, and then MAMO would then have to go to Debian and kind of like, you know, iron out whatever patches might need to be ironed out? How did that work?
Well, I think what pretty much happened is that inside Nokia, there were some real fans of Debian. I think Debian is a popular Linux distribution in Finland. And I know there are some prominent Finnish Linux developers inside Debian, like Lars Virzianis, if I'm saying his name right. In any case, those developers would just sort of take Debian's tools and tool chain and just use it inside MAMO.
Mm.
Because, of course, they could. You know, there's no reason not to. And I think that was largely the connection. I think officially Nokia would say, okay, you can do this as long as it works, but you know, we don't expect you to start fixing things directly in Debian itself. So in many ways, it was a fork, to be quite honest.
Okay.
A fork funded by Nokia.
Okay.
And some changes were passed back to Debian, but I don't necessarily think there were that many significant ones. For example, I know that Nokia had their own patches to Lintian, which is Debian's package checker.
Okay.
And I tried to work to integrate some of those back upstream into Lintian, but a lot of them weren't so interesting to Lintian in Debian. And so I think that's the case with a lot of the software. The software was very specialized for MAMO, and Debian would look at it and say, okay, that's cool, but it doesn't really help us much.
Mm.
So was there a significant contribution from MAMO to Debian? No, I would say it was pretty much the other way around, mostly from Debian to MAMO.
Yeah. That's probably the way it happens with all derivatives, I'd imagine.
I'd imagine too.
Do you know if there was any sort of like bad blood between Nokia and like Debian or MAMO? Like, what sort of, I guess this will start to lead to kind of talking about MAMO, what sort of mm-hmm. brought this on for Nokia to be like, yeah, you know, we spent money on making MAMO, we put MAMO on these devices, but we're just going to cut the cord here. Like, did something happen for that to, you know, to me it seems kind of strange to just completely drop this project that, you know, had some momentum and, you know, I'm sure if you put a little more effort into it, it would become what they want MIGO to become. So why did they just all of a sudden cut the ties and be like, forget it, we're not supporting this anymore, now we're going to go with MIGO? Did something happen?
Well, that's a good question, and I think by and large we can only speculate.
Right.
But I think something did happen, and I think what happened was something called Ofono.
Mm.
So I think Nokia is a phone company, and they started to say, oh, wow, these phones are getting pretty powerful. The ARM chip is getting really powerful. And they're not really phones anymore. They're really mobile computers. So how do we become a mobile computer company? So Nokia, I think through MAMO, did some research and development and said, okay, this is how you use a mobile computer. This is what it might look like, blah, blah, blah. But Ofono was a real change because it was a way to use the phone on a computer. So it was much more Intel-based, and they worked closely with Intel on that.
Mm.
So they brought their phone knowledge to Intel, and Intel brought their chip knowledge to the phone. And all of a sudden, that collaboration, I think, brought both those companies to the realization, look, so much of our infrastructure is duplicated. Why are we duplicating this work? Why don't we focus on just one operating system, and then we work in the areas that we can bring best advantage, the best differentiation?
Hmm.
And I think that's what happened. I think they said, okay, let's just, you know, go with one operating system. And then I think it was a difficult decision to decide which one to go to. Debian has very strong free software values.
Right.
And I think that still scares a lot of companies.
Yeah.
I think for many businesses, it's a huge advantage because, you know, there's no reason you can't use free software for business. But I think that the case was made that if we use sort of a Red Hat derived packaging system, we build on Moblin, and then we take in Qt, then that's enough of a compromise between the MAMO world and the Moblin world that we have something that suits both parties. And I think that's what happened. And of course, to me, it's a real disappointment. I have a lot of knowledge and time built up in Debian, and so I just felt that I couldn't continue as a dev master if I'm no longer building dev. So
right.
That's when I decided it was time for me to go.
Yeah, like I said, it's strange that they put all this effort into it and then just be like, forget it. Like,
yeah, I think so.
You know, like we said, Debian supports so many architectures. I don't, you know, I'm by no means any sort of expert in this area at all, but I would imagine if you had, you know, this platform MAMO built an ARM, it should be relatively easy to port that over to like an x86. I'd imagine, you know, to me that just would make more sense than, you know, oh, well, we'll just use our Qt framework on what you did, Intel, even though Intel knows nothing about building operating systems. I don't know, it's just a strange move to me,
I thought so. I still kind of do. But I think from a business and marketing perspective, it's pretty smart. Because it gives Linux the kind of commercial support that a lot of companies need.
Mm.
And Intel is not an obvious company to be making an operating system. You know, they sell chips and they want to sell more chips. But that's good for companies like Samsung because they do have to write software. So they don't want Intel competing with them directly.
That's true.
So Intel can just say, hey, look, here's a chip. Oh, and by the way, here's an operating system for your apps right out of the box. And, oh, yeah, we'll build you an app store, too, which you can have complete control of.
Mm.
And that is a pretty persuasive argument to a company like, you know, Samsung.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or Dell or whomever.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the move really was marketing, from a marketing standpoint, smart. From a free software standpoint and a Debian standpoint, not so great.
Yeah. Well, I guess speaking of MIGO, we were talking earlier, and you went to the MIGO conference that was held a few days ago or last week or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, could you tell us a little bit about that, maybe some of the things that happened there or what you saw that was interesting or maybe any announcements that was interesting?
Well, I wasn't there for the whole conference, unfortunately, but there are two things that I take away that I think was really fantastic. And the first one was the number of visitors. In, I think it was 2009, at the MAMO summit, there were 300 people, and everybody got an N900. And this year, there were 1,000 people in Dublin for the MIGO conference, man, which is huge. And everybody got a Lenovo notebook. So the interest in the operating system has just grown dramatically, I think, just from not just from developers, but from companies, too. That's a very exciting thing. And then, you know, the fact that they're giving away free hardware is only going to build excitement.
Yeah.
There, I think that since this was the first MIGO conference, I think that, you know, there wasn't really much surprise announcements. There not a lot of product releases.
Yeah.
Both Intel and Nokia had their own developer forums. And, you know, there's the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to focus more on product announcements and those kinds of forums.
Okay.
This, the MIGO conference was really sort of a get-together for developers to have a lot of fun and to check out, you know, really look under the hood and look at some of the deeper layers of the software and do that kind of development stuff. So there weren't a lot of product announcements that – nothing necessarily that blew me.
So the I'm assuming the netbooks are running that netbook version of MIGO. Would you say it's finished, close to finished? I'm assuming you got one and have been playing with it.
I did not get one. No.
Oh man.
I've been at a couple demos with it already because the company that I work for, we work in the automotive Linux business, and we've done some demos with Intel. And they've had this netbook there before, and it's really nice. It's got a nice touch screen, so it kind of can work both as a touch screen device as well as it's got its own attached keyboard.
Mm.
And yeah, I think MIGO really is a finished product. There are a bunch of things they've done that I think make a huge difference, like the fast boot. Now, this is a speedy little thing. It boots up quickly, and it feels really responsive on the Atom. I think MIGO looks really good. I think they've laid out the entire operating system in a much more touch-friendly way.
Mm.
So yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool.
But as far as the phone, like being on the phone though, it's not, you know, it's not quite there. I think recently, within the last few weeks or something, like the lead, not the developer, but like one of the lead guys over the MIGO project, didn't he like quit or something? And like,
yeah.
So I mean,
Yari Axie.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, he was head of the MAMO project and sort of shepherded it, I guess, as it went over to MIGO. But yeah, I think it's recently been announced that he's gone to HP and is going to work on the Palm OS,
yeah,
the web OS.
Yeah.
Palm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of interesting. I think, you know, I mean, this guy has a lot of knowledge of how to put Linux on an embedded device. So I think that skill set is wanted by a lot of big companies.
Yeah, these days a lot more people are starting to see the power and the usefulness of Linux now.
Yeah, I really think so. I mean, Android, I think, has really proven that Linux is a viable alternative operating system. I think that some of the marketing research I've seen shows that most people think in 3 to 5 years, Linux will be the dominant operating system in embedded devices.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's a really smart move by HP to hire Yari Axie away. He's a smart guy. He's a good guy. Very open. But I don't think that's going to slow MIGO down too much. I know that Nokia is certainly still committed to it.
Okay.
And I think we will see Telephone, probably the N900, come out with a supported version of MIGO.
Do you think
next year
is the N900? Is it still like is it available now, or did they kind of take it off the market? Because I'd imagine if you buy it now, it comes with MAMO on it, and you know, I've heard some people say, oh, you know, the MAMO is dead. Why would I want to buy a phone with a dead operating system on it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So has Nokia pulled that back for now, or do they still sell? I'm not quite sure. Is it still?
Amazingly enough, you know, this time last year, they were really hard to get. And they kept saying, I live in Sweden. They kept saying, oh, it's coming to Sweden in a month. And it didn't. And it finally came in the end of December. And now when I go to the major telephone operators here in town, there it is. The N900 is still for sale, prominently displayed. The N900 was much more successful than Nokia anticipated. Maybe they haven't marketed that success very well, but I think it's still doing quite well. And, you know, as a user, maybe you do want to wait for MIGO to come out on that device. But as a developer, I don't know that it will really make that much difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to transition a bit. But even today, a lot of people are already dual booting
the
N900 between MAMO and Nego. So, yeah.
Yeah. How is, like, everyone over here in the United States, everyone's, you know, especially like in San Francisco or something, like every other person's carrying an iPhone. Is it like that over there in like Sweden or Europe? Does everyone have N900s?
Actually, no. I won't say it's quite like that, no.
Okay.
It's more of a geeky populace. It's somebody who probably runs Linux at home or has at least heard about it. But Nokia has a much stronger brand presence here. So you'll see a fair amount of Nokia phones wherever you go.
Like the N8 and the N97 and stuff like that? Do a lot of people?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I think those are quite popular. And sort of, you know, if it was 2 or 3 years ago, the regular phones, you know, 50% are Nokia.
Mm.
And there are a lot of people who are not that interested in a smartphone. You know, older people, let's say, they just think, oh, I just want to make calls. I don't care about Facebook.
So right, right.
Nokia totally dominates that market.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, it's the N900 is still pretty much a geeky phone, or for somebody who's kind of tech savvy. The iPhone is very popular here too, as well.
Yeah, the only thing that stinks for us in the United States is you can't get any Nokia phones like subsidized. So if I want to get the N900, I have to pay like whatever it is, $500, $600.
Yeah.
You know that? I'd imagine over there it's subsidized by the carriers, right?
It can be. We have a different model, and in Europe, the model is not to necessarily subsidize phones.
Okay.
So you've always been able to just buy a phone, unlock it, and use it anywhere.
Okay.
So, but there, you know, you can buy subsidized phones, but I don't think that, maybe the N900 actually is subsidized.
Yeah, I think I remember someone saying, like, in the UK, I don't know if it was, like, on Orange or something like that, but they were saying, like, oh, yeah, I can get the N900 for, like, you know, $50 or whatever, $100. And
nice.
And then you get the, you know, you get your contract. I was like, man, I wish I could do that over here. I would totally get one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just can't spend $500 or $600 on a phone.
That's an awful lot of money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you spend it anyways, you know, cause I mean, if you're spending, you know, $60-$90 a month on your cell phone monthly bill anyways, I mean, you're going to spend it either way, really. So. You know.
True. It's just that, you know, $60 a month, I think, is easier to bite off.
Yeah, it's easier to swallow.
Plus, one wants to buy a new phone every year, and you can't just go around every year
for $500. Yeah, exactly. That, too. I mean, back to Migo, though, another problem that I've seen that, like, you know, these quote-unquote tech pundits or whatever, I don't think they understand, but... You know, they're all like, oh, you know, what's Migo? They keep saying they're going to come out with it, and then it gets delayed, and then they're going to come out with it, and it gets delayed. So these tech pundits don't understand, like, how this stuff works, or, like, the open source stuff works. And, like, a lot of, like, I'm wondering if, like, a lot of people are, like, getting that, if they're kind of, you know, thinking, like, oh, well, Migo will never come out, and, you know, they have that idea, like, even when it does, it's just going to be washed up anyways, and it's a waste of time, and... You know, there's people saying, like, Nokia should just switch to putting Android on everything. They shouldn't even bother.
Yeah.
You know, they shouldn't even bother with Migo. I mean, what was kind of like the feel at the conference? I mean, obviously, if there's a Migo conference, they feel pretty strongly about it, so.
Definitely. No, I think the mood is quite the opposite. There are a couple things about Migo that are really different from Android. First of all, it's much more open.
Yeah.
Google doesn't release Android until the first device is shipping.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah, it's open source. It's open source because it's under the Apache license. But they just dump it out there, and you don't get access to it. You can't influence it beforehand.
Yeah, it seems like they don't release the code until, like, the day they release it. Like, and you know, it seems like they wait until the absolute last minute before, like, they could actually get in trouble for not releasing the code. So, like, then they, you know, so, yeah, like, I hear what you're saying.
And they just throw the OS over the wall. It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, here's the code. Thanks, bye. I mean, that's fine. You know, they're not violating the GPL or the APL, as it were.
Right.
But it's not really open source in the sense that anybody can get involved. It's a meritocracy. You know, it's he who makes the commits and writes the code gets to decide. In Migo, that's totally the case, man. This is run by the Linux Foundation.
Mm.
Okay, so if you want to get involved, you just get involved. You say, okay, I've got this package. I've written the software. You know, where do I submit it? Oh, throw it in the open build system. See if it builds. If it does, and now we'll incorporate it into Mego, you know? And so that's a totally different thing, because companies can now say, okay, I see what Mego is today. I see its roadmap to the next release. I can build my application so that when this new product is released, my application works and is supported. And that's a very powerful thing to say. A lot of companies don't get that opportunity with Android unless they join the open embedded.
Mm.
And okay, you know, I mean, that's not that big a deal. But if you really want influence over it, you really want something much more open. And Mego's definitely that. And second of all, this is new. I mean, this is Nokia and Intel. These are really big companies that are releasing this operating system. And it's taking a little longer than they imagined to integrate it. But it's also going to reduce fragmentation, where Android is really having a hard time with that.
Mm.
So if you have a Mego certified device, you know that another Mego certified device will just work with it.
Okay.
That's pretty exciting, you know, to be able to show your full phone screen in your car, have the exact same OS on your phone just pop up on your car's dashboard. That's a pretty powerful anti-fragmentation device. So
are they trying to push it to like sort of like set top boxes and stuff like that too? Are they trying to just, you know, surround your whole environment with everything possibly running Mego if you were inclined to do so?
Yeah, definitely. Anything that runs an embedded chip. If it runs an embedded chip, Mego will run it. Sure.
Yeah, that's,
you know, why not? And you can take the parts of it you want, and you can leave parts of it behind. You can decide to be Mego compliant if you wish. And you can decide not to be Mego compliant. It doesn't matter.
Mm.
So it has a great deal more flexibility. And I think that's really a powerful recipe for a lot of companies, and which is why a lot of companies are joining the Linux Foundation. Samsung joined recently. AMD just joined recently. You know, they're a big competitor with Intel.
Right.
They're joining because they see the future in Mego. So, no, I do realize that people are a little impatient, and they'd really like to see the first, you know, production quality Mego device being sold on the market. I think we'll see that after the holidays, after the new year. And I think we'll be pleasantly surprised if we look at something like CES.
Yeah.
But it's a different beast, and I think it's taking longer than anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, I mean, we all have short memories. I mean, you know, when the iPhone first came out, it wasn't exactly the iPhone 4 that we now see. So we forget quickly, you know, how long this stuff takes to implement and get going. So, you know, I think a lot of people are impatient now, and everyone's like, oh, look at Android, it's growing so fast. Well, it really wasn't, you know, the first year. It took a while for it took a while for it to get some legs and start taking off. So, I mean,
yeah, absolutely. And it's very exciting that it did, because it sort of validates Linux in the embedded space. But, you know, it's so interesting to see these dynamics, because it can run on any phone. Then all of a sudden you see all these devices using it. Well, if you have an even more open system that can run on any phone, that might be a challenge to Android. And I hope that's what Mego is going to be.
Yeah, 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 definitely. Like you said, Nokia, I think Nokia has something like 50% of the worldwide market or something like that.
I think that's probably true, yeah.
Yeah, so
something crazy.
So, you know, I mean, the second they get a Mego phone out, I mean, they could already outsell Android and iPhones together, you know?
They certainly could, you know. I mean, they have amazing channels outside of the United States. So all those markets, say Europe or Asia or even in Africa, all those markets that Apple hasn't built relationships with for different cell phone companies and telephone producers, Nokia already has established presence in these markets.
Mm.
So they can have these advanced smartphones and tailor them to the marketing message of those markets and be very successful. So I wouldn't count them out just yet.
Yeah, plus, I mean, like India, China, Africa. I heard some statistic the other day, like 80% of cell phone users don't even have smartphones yet.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly.
That's a giant market.
We're so focused on like, whoa, look at my phone can do. But I think a lot of people don't have smartphones yet. And hey, and China Mobile, they just joined the Linux Foundation too.
Oh, really?
Certainly one of the reasons to do that is to watch as Mego develop.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, there's a billion people right there.
Yeah, exactly. They have the largest number of cell phone subscribers in the world.
I'd imagine India would be a close second. Their infrastructure must be really built around wireless technology, too.
Yeah, you would. I think because it allows them to leapfrog, say, other technologies. So, yeah, you would imagine that's a huge market. If Nokia has a strong presence there, well, maybe their smartphones will be favored.
Yeah.
I don't know. Remains to be seen. I mean, it sounds so easy to say here and now, but there's a lot of question marks about the future.
Yeah, the potential is definitely there, though. So, yeah. Very exciting. So I want to get back to one thing on MAMO, actually. Like, you know, it's community based now. It's, you know, it's not dead like these other people are saying. It's still, yes, you know, it's still up and running and can still be used. It's still being developed. You know, I was asking you before the interview, like, you know, are people going to have the chance to, you know, maybe take some, you know, N8 or, you know, some newer Nokia phone, and if it does, even if it has MeeGo on it, they'd still probably have the opportunity to run MAMO if that's what they wish then, correct?
Yes. I mean, right now you can dual boot between MAMO and MeeGo. It's not too hard to do. You'd have to be a little geeky and sort of get your hands dirty, but it's not too hard to do. So I see no reason to go the other path as well. If you have a new phone and it already runs MeeGo, it shouldn't be too hard to run MAMO on that. Or, you know, if it's running Symbian, it also shouldn't be too hard to run MAMO on that.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So there are not a lot of phones that run MAMO that are sold directly from Nokia. But since they're, you know, I see no reason why you wouldn't be able to do that.
Are there any, like, instructions anywhere, like on MAMO or on the web anywhere, that would kind of give someone a rough idea of, here's how you can,
there
you know,
are.
Try and get MAMO on the XYZ phone? Is there a place to go, like a wiki or something?
Yeah, MeeGo has a pretty awesome wiki that describes getting how you can dual boot your M900 by putting MeeGo on a SIM card. Sorry, not a SIM card, but an SD card.
Mm.
And then you have two operating systems. And so people have been doing this for a while now, actually. And the wiki instructions are pretty clear and pretty good. And you can just substitute other operating systems too if you wanted to. I think people out there have put Android on their N900 or what have you. So, yeah, it's definitely doable, and the instructions are fairly clear. You probably want to be fairly confident that you're not going to destroy anything.
How about getting like newer when newer versions of MAMO comes out? How about getting them on like the N810 and the N800? Like how is that going to look? Or is, I mean, obviously there's going to be a point where, look, this isn't going to run. This is like, you know, a 400 megahertz ARM processor or whatever. So, is it still at that point where you still can't upgrade it, or have we kind of come to that, the cusp of, you know, not really being able to upgrade the N810 or anything like that anymore?
You know, there's been a lot of work to make sure that later versions of MAMO are backwards compatible. But I do think the N900 changed that a bit.
Mm.
So I think the situation is, as you say, it's less likely that we're going to be able to run newer versions of MAMO on the older phones. That being said, I know that there is work being done for a community port of newer software back to the N800 or the N810.
Okay.
But, you know, they don't have, say, a cell phone. They don't have
right.
a lot of the tools that the N900 has.
Yeah.
They don't have similar processor and screen, etc. So I think you're going to find a lot of the software like MeeGo Touch, that's just not going to be relevant.
Yeah, that's true.
So I do think we've really reached that point. However, you know, some of that stuff will be able to be backported. So I don't think that the N800 that you have now is certainly not worthless. It's a great web surfing device.
If MAMO is ARM-based, if I know there's a lot of talk of people looking at trying to make these, I guess people are calling them smart books or whatever, like that are ARM-based, like netbooks, basically. If we start seeing something like that, I'm assuming we could get MAMO on these things, couldn't we?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nokia is selling netbooks now. I don't think it runs MAMO, but I think...
Yeah, I think they're Intel-based, though. They're the Atom-based...
I think they are,
yeah.
But it's clearly that Nokia is building up competence in that area. And I wouldn't be surprised if a homegrown Nokia operating system showed up on one of those Netbooks, and if you can get Mego running on it, you could probably get MIMO running on it, or better yet, Debian itself. So
yeah, exactly. You can just go right to the source of it all.
Yeah.
Jeremiah, is there anything else that you want to go over with MIMO or Mego? Anything that I might have overlooked, or anything else that you find interesting going on in this space that we didn't get to talk about?
Oh, I think you asked all the really pertinent questions. I'm really excited by the fact that MIMO is a community project now. I don't consider it dead. In fact, I see some Debian developers moving over in that direction. And the community owns it. It's a very different beast. And it's really exciting. And I think it's still a very useful and usable operating system. So
yeah, we'll have to get some of these newer phones come out. We'll have to get some people, you know, like you said, getting Symbian off or dual booting with Symbian and MIMO or, you know.
Yeah. And MIMO's a great thing for a hacker to use, say, on their old smartphone. They just bought a new one. Hack around in your old smartphone and see what you can develop. And MIMO is a great project for that because it's completely open.
Do you know if anyone's attempted getting MIMO on, like, the N8? I think that was, like, that seemed like a really good, like, as far as hardware goes, a really good cell phone. But for some reason, they put Symbian on it, which, you know, that's getting a little long in the tooth. But, I mean, I guess that's another conversation. But
yeah.
Has any, you know, have you heard of anyone in the community trying to get MIMO on the N8?
I'd have to Google for that because I'm not certain.
Okay.
But, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody had.
Yeah, because that would be a great, you know, like I said, the hardware on that phone seems great. And, you know, MIMO is by far a lot more superior and powerful than Symbian. So
I think so. It's much more robust than Symbian.
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
Yeah.
But Symbian is an open project, too. So I guess people can just dive in and hack that to their heart's content.
That's true, too. Yeah. Yeah, I guess speaking of Symbian, though, I guess Nokia somewhere, well, I guess they cut the cord with MIMO, really, so I guess they're not concerned with MIMO, and I guess they're focusing on Symbian and Mego then.
Very much so. I think in some ways they've even diminished their interest in Symbian. So it looks like they're betting a great deal on Mego.
Mm. Well, I guess if they, you know, once that gets up and running, they could really, you know, dumb down Mego, I guess, to a Symbian type interface for, you know, a smartphone instead of or a feature phone instead of a smartphone. I guess if they played their cards right, they could do something like that.
Sure. I mean, that's definitely not the problem. I think the problem nowadays is people want, say, web browsing on their smartphone. So you have to have an operating system that's sort of bloated, that's got all the proper software to do that kind of thing. If you want a truly embedded device that has limited functionality and it's a so-called feature phone, you know, there's no reason you couldn't slim down Mego to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting times. It's pretty cool to see all this stuff going on with cell phones. I mean, cell phones are getting ridiculous. But at the beginning of 2011, ARM is supposed to be pushing out a dual-core ARM processor. And
yeah, I think it's going to be a dual-core Tegra.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And each core will be like, at 1 gig.
Yeah, I was going to say, I heard rumors even 1.5.
That's unbelievable. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, that's totally ridiculous. My first computer, my first computer was a Commodore 64, but my first, like, Pentium computer, I had a P2 263. I mean, that's just insane to be like, yeah, my little phone here has a dual core 1 gig processor, you know? It's ridiculous.
It's quite amazing. I think we're going to see all kinds of new uses for it. I mean, I can't even imagine what people are going to think up.
Yeah, I know. The sky is really the limit right now. We're in the wild west of technology, and things are moving insanely fast now. So.
I agree. They're moving incredibly fast. And one of the reasons is because of free software. You know, you don't need to do anything. You can just sort of grab it, hack around in your company lab or at home, and all of a sudden you've got something that proves you can do this, and away you go.
So. Yeah. And then you get the community around it, and then instead of one guy working on it, now you got 50 people contributing, and it just explodes overnight, you know?
Yeah. It really does. And so many businesses are starting to say, wow, this is serious stuff. So I think we're just going to see more and more interest in it, and more developers come around. And the speed's going to go even faster.
Yeah. Well, Jeremiah, thank you for your time, and I'm glad we finally were able to catch up with each other. Like I said earlier, I wasn't going to let you go that easily. So,
well, thanks very much, and I really appreciate this project. You know, I can't tell you how great this is that you're doing this, and it's a wonderful addition to the community. So,
I appreciate it, and you know, anyone listening, please, you know, get a hold of me if you have a project you're working on in Debian, or you may know someone that's doing something, and you want to give me their contact info or whatever. Please get a hold of me. I'm willing to. There's lots of stuff going on that I'm definitely not aware of. So if anyone can bring it to my attention, I'm more than willing to get anyone on here and you know support what they're working on and bring attention and hopefully get other people interested.
Great stuff.
So yeah, Jeremiah, thank you again. Thank you for continuing with MAMO. And before we go, can you give out any sort of contact info if people, you know, don't know how to get there for some reason? Can you give out some contact information?
Yes, definitely. MAMO lives at MAMO.org. There's a community council that runs MAMO, and you can get in touch with those guys directly. It's got a huge wiki, so if you scoot on over to MAMO.org, everything lives under there.
Okay. Awesome. Is there an IRC channel too, or?
There is.
Okay.
It's just called MAMO.
Sweet. Awesome. Again, Jeremiah, thank you for your help. Thank you for your work on MAMO, your commitment to free and open software, and we thank you on behalf of the Debian community and the free software at large. I thank you for your work.
Jonathan, thanks. Same to you. Thanks very much for doing this, and this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm sure we'll have you on again sometime.
I hope so.
Definitely.
And I hope I have something worth talking about.
Oh, no, we definitely did today, so I appreciate it.
Cool.
All right, thanks, Jeremiah. We'll talk to you soon.
Terrific. Thanks again, and have a good weekend.
All right, you too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone or you yourself are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us so we can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.